Brad Brewer of the Brad Brewer Golf Academy.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for joining us for the Golf Smarter podcast. If you're new to the program, new to podcasts, or even new to iPods and MP3 players, we extend a warm welcome and are glad that you can join the team. Just to let you know, Golf Smarter has been around for a full year, and our programs are delivered to you each week. So if you haven't yet subscribed, please do so, and you'll receive the program automatically when a new one is published. If you've just discovered us, make sure that you check out our entire catalog of backdated episodes. There's no charge to subscribe, and there's a lot of upside to your membership. We have regular drawings for great golf products, free stuff when you participate, but most of all, we love to talk with experts about how to improve your golf game. Not through mechanics or technique, but through strategy and conditioning. If word of mouth is the best advertising, then let me tell you that I receive emails on a regular basis from listeners around the world who say that they're playing better and enjoying it a whole lot more because of the information they get on this podcast. We believe that the fastest way and the most consistent way to lower your score is when you golf smarter. Our podcast is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. If you're looking for the ultimate golf learning experience, check into Bird Golf Academy. They have schools all over the United States. For more, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the link to Bird Golf Academy. Our guest today is the president and founder of the Brad Brewer Golf Academy at bradbrewer.com. Today we're going to focus on many of his teachings that come out of his Brad Brewer High Performance Golf Player Development Program. We'll discuss course strategy, personal expectations, pre- and post-shot routines, tips, drills, and more. Welcome, Brad.
Well, thank you, Fred. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, this is very exciting. You've got a very nice resume, and I think that you have a lot to add to what's going on in our heads and will help improve our game quite a bit. The Brad Brewer Golf Academy, how long have you had that?
Well, I've been here at the Rosenshingle Creek in Orlando since 2005, and we're excited to have our new hotel up and operating, and it's everything that I've wanted in a learning center. They've been able to help me develop, so it's been great.
Oh, congratulations. That's fabulous. I understand that you also worked with Arnold Palmer in Golf Academy.
I did, yes. For 10 years, I ran the Arnold Palmer Golf Academies worldwide, and we had 7 schools around the country, and we had an awful lot of fun traveling with Arnold and learning from him on a daily basis, and that's a lot of the content in which we deliver in our programs today.
As a golfer, not as a golf instructor, what's the best piece of advice that Arnold Palmer ever gave you?
well, you know, he at one point was talking about course strategies, and he said it's always better to err being aggressive. And the reason for that, if you think about it, when you're playing and if you err being aggressive, you can kind of fight back from that. But when you start erring being timid, you're coming down the stretch and you start getting a little tight, very difficult to get out of that mode. So that's one thing that we always try to strive with our players is when you're there and having a chance to win, you know, stay fearless and aggressive.
Define aggressive for me.
Well, aggressive, you know, it would not be out of control. And that's, you know, the first thing that I'm sure, you know, you and others may think about is that, you know, how aggressive is aggressive? Aggressive is being smart in your decision, but then being attentive, being focused, taking a good aggressive swing. And if, like, for instance, if you're between clubs and you're feeling like you're a little jacked up, for instance, take less club and stay aggressive with that swing. Because I think the tendency in situations like that is to take more club and then try to put a swing on it that, you know, is, you know, you're trying to finesse in there. Well, when you're calm, that's one thing. But when you're fired up and you got a chance to win, most people are, you know, getting pretty excited. You're better to, you know, stay on that high side with that energy level and fire something in there pretty strong.
That doesn't mean swing harder, though, does it?
No, it means you're trying to swing within yourself, but at the same time, you know, your juices are flowing. You've got to be paying attention to that. And unless you're really good, and I'm sure we're going to get into this tonight, you know, we're really good at being able to control your emotions and bring your emotions down to a point where you feel like you're in total control, but that's not always the easiest thing to do. So when Arnold is saying, you know, better to err being aggressive, he wants you to take that aggressive approach, make aggressive swings, and but within reason. And, you know, he'd be the first one to tell you that an aggressive swing in his mind is around 80 to maybe 85% of his maximum. So he, as a player, has learned how to, you know, play with a controlled swing. And being aggressive to him is being still within your bounds of being able to have precision. And that precision would be, obviously, to him, that 80% of his total capacity.
But I guess the key would be stay within yourself. Don't try to do things that you really are not comfortable or confident in doing.
Well, you know, that's a good point. And we'll get back to this quote by Arnold, or this thought by him. Just so, you know, I make sure I you know, communicate it correctly for everyone. And that is, you know, he's making the comment to a better player that's playing in a tournament situation and coming down the stretch when your heart's pumping and your attention to trying to stay focused on one shot at a time is the most important thing. The tendency that people will have is they're either get tight and freeze up and try to play too conservative, or you can take an aggressive approach. And if you take a look at the way that Tiger plays, 9 times out of 10, you know, he's going to be fearless and aggressive. And, you know, as a result, he most of the time ends up winning. On occasion, he doesn't. But when he's got a chance to win, he's fired in there with an aggressive approach. He's making a very not a conservative approach at all in his way of finishing out a tournament.
Have you ever seen a player before that has that kind of focus? And I'm talking about Tiger.
Well, you know, I think Tiger has the best of what I would consider three great players. He has, you know, he's working towards the precision, and this is something that's a work in progress, of Ben Hogan. He has the ability to think and concentrate and, you know, stay in his game plan like someone like Nicklaus, very disciplined. Discipline with his thoughts, discipline with his routines, and then he has that heart of a warrior like Arnold Palmer. You know, you wrap those three into one player, and that's awesomeness.
One player with that body,
exactly.
Well, now let's talk about. You mentioned course strategy. Let's approach that for a minute, and talk about the importance and how to approach that. And what you mean by that?
Well,
and I'm sorry to give you three questions at once.
Yeah, that's all right. Not a problem. I'll start by saying this: that you know, a big part of what I try to get across to someone is what I call grid golf. And grid golf, if you take a look at a golf hole, and you know, I think better players actually think and play this way. They'll play a shot. Okay, they're not trying to aim right down the middle of a fairway and, you know, with the hopes that they're going to hit it straight. Whereas if they miss it right, you know, they've got only so much room until it's either in the rough or out of bounds. Or if they miss it left, it could be the same thing. They're playing a shot, so they're deciding, all right, I'm going to play a fade here, or I'm going to play a left or right shot. So as a result, what they're going to do is they're going to start their ball more down the left-hand side and give themselves room to work the ball back. If they hit it straight, they're fine. If they fade it the way they desired, they're right in the center of the fairway. And say they, you know, make a bad swing and they come off of it, it's going to be still in play because they had played at an angle that gives them the widest corridor of opportunity. And just, you know, getting people to think more about where their grids are so that the ball, A, stays in play is certainly going to help them, you know, be able to play better golf and move around the golf course in a very, you know, strategic way. The other thing I like to try to get them to do, Fred, is, you know, get focused on, you know, each shot at hand. And, you know, when you're on the golf course, I think that each player playing their best is in one of four different categories of thought process. The first would be that they are, you know, out there gathering information and, you know, they're in a mode where it is preparing to hit the shot. So it would be preparation first. And this is when we are, you know, throwing the grass up in the air. We're getting a good feel for the situations, the lie, you know, how we feel, you know, and what we're comfortable with executing. And preparation is the first phase of our thoughts. Once we've decided what we want to do, we move into really being in our automatic or our mode of really execution. And in execution is pretty simple. You want to minimize your thoughts. You want to focus much more on ball and target and the feels in which you just practice behind the ball. Very key. An important part of that is having a routine that keeps you in that moment, keeps you from not second-guessing yourself or thinking about something else. And, you know, I hear a lot of talk about, you know, the importance of routine, but routine in its simplest form is just that, is to keep your mind quiet and keep your attention to what you just thought about, practiced, and feels, and have in your mind. So it's a very precise routine that's practiced over and over again, and that's going to help you stay in that moment and not let your mind start wandering and thinking about, oh, well, last time I played this hole, I left it right in the water. Not a good thought as you're walking in to be able to execute a shot. So, you know, part of that process is a real good, solid routine. If you take a look at the best players, they all do it, and you could put a stopwatch to it. I mean, some days I'm out there with my best players, and I will do that as well. I'll put a stop clock on their routine, and if they're off by, you know, more than maybe a second to 2 seconds, I'll have them start all over again. I'll back them off the ball because I know that they're not staying in their process. They're starting to think about things. Maybe they're second-guessing themselves, and they need to learn at that point to back off and start all over again. Not that I want to promote slow play, but I do want to promote, you know, good quality shot making. And there's plenty of time to restart and get yourself refocused without, you know, holding up the golf course. And that's a key element. Then the third phase, right after we've made a good solid strike, is reaction. Reaction as to what just happened. It's a very important part of your thought process in the golf course. And a lot of times what happens is, what I've noticed is players really get on themselves. They emotionally get attached to the success or failure of their shot. So as a result, when they just have struck a shot and it's dribbling down the fairway, you know, they get disappointed, they get frustrated, and as a result of being in that mode, they don't get a chance to really learn what just happened. So what I recommend in reaction is to allow yourself a chance to learn. good shot or bad shot, tweak yourself so that the next time you don't make that same error again. Or if you did hit a quality shot, what just happened? What did you feel? So that you can keep that sensation going, so that as you gain momentum throughout your round. And then the second most important part of reaction is letting go. You know, you've just given yourself some quick feedback on what just happened. Now, get out of that thought process and go into the final of the four phases, and that is recovery. Probably the most important part of the whole process, because if we don't get out of this thought process where we're burning a lot of energy and get into recovery mode, we'll only last about four holes out there, Fred, and we're going to run out of juice, and we're going to be looking for the 19th hole real soon. So, you know, that is a very important part, and you really need to allow yourself to get into that recovery mode, and it's after every shot. So, you know, you enjoy that walk and get your mind off of everything. Because the typical is someone would hit a poor shot and they go right into analytical, and they'll stay, you know, trying to think about everything that they read in that last golf magazine or digest or on the Golf Channel. And as a result, they just start turning themselves into a knot as a result of just too much thinking, overthinking. And so you got to let it go. You got to let yourself get relaxed. It's a good chance to focus on your heart math, which I know is one of the topics we're going to talk about. And just get yourself nice and calm and comfortable and enjoy the moment. Enjoy the beautiful outdoors.
Well, I'll tell you, you just taught me an incredibly valuable lesson. And that is, don't ask three questions at once, because I have so many more questions based on what you just said. I was like, oh, if I only ask you one question, I can follow it up. But now I've
That's
got like
correct.
12 questions. Where do I go from here? Oh, my. So we've talked about heart math on the show. We had Dr. Bruce Wilson talking about that recently. But we also have had Fred Shoemaker and Extraordinary Golf. Do you subscribe to Fred Shoemaker's theories? Because I heard some of that in there.
Well, yes. I think that Fred, and there's a number of great people out there like Fred that are delivering good content into the golf industry. And Fred has been a wonderful content deliverer, and I support and believe in a lot of his thoughts and philosophies.
All right. Well, if you want more on that, go back in the show. You can always, I'm speaking to the listener now, that they can always go back and hear the interview with Fred Shoemaker in Extraordinary Golf. And another thing that came up in what you're talking about is post-shot routine, not just a pre-shot routine, but a post-shot routine.
Mm.
There's a lot of value in that. We even discussed that with Glenn Alba at one point. But you really see that as being an important part of your next shot, is evaluating your last shot?
You bet it is. And one thing that I did not talk about that I think is important on that is I just had a playing lesson this morning with a lady that has been playing for maybe 4 years. And, she's a 110 shooter. And this is very typical, not just of, women, but I think everyone in general, as we're playing the game, is we get very, very much caught up in that last shot. And we get pretty down on ourselves pretty quickly. And one of the things that I noticed with the best players that I've been around, the Palmers and, the Scott Hokes and Payne Stewarts and people like that who I've had a chance to really know and admire, they are their best cheerleader on the golf course. Yeah. I'll tell you a story. I went out one day with Mark McCumber. This is about 15 years ago, and we were playing the front nine of a golf course up in Jacksonville. And he missed the first five holes. He was hitting it left. He was hitting it right. He was hitting it all over the place. And the two other guys we're playing with were like, my God, this guy actually has won tournaments on the PGA Tour. And what was hilarious about what we observed is not the way he was striking it. It was his comments after he hit every shot. He duck hooks the first one into the ninth fairway, and he goes, "Ah, that's wide open over there. I'll be able to get that on the green." He goes over there, knocks it, sure enough, up around the green. He goes, "I'll get that up and down," chips it up and down, makes his par, goes on the next. And it was kind of like this, shot after shot, you know, and he's kind of scruffing around, but he never beat himself up. He never had a negative comment about any one of these shots. He always said something positive, like, "Oh, that's all right, I can get that up and down from there," or, you know, "I'll make this putt," or whatever. Long story short, we turned the front nine, and I said to the guy I'm riding with, I said, "Guess what Mark should on the front?" He goes, "I don't know, what, 40, 39? 33.
Wow.
You know, he made it through the first four or five holes, and he was struggling, put it together, made a couple nice birdies coming in. He turns at 33, where if anybody else except for his head would have been in that skin, you know, we would have shot 40 to 45.
Sure.
Why? Because...
and been happy with it.
We would have beat ourselves up. We would have absolutely beat ourselves up. He had, you know, be it enough confidence or, you know, I think it's more just being trained not to be hard on yourself, because there's no one else out there rooting you on. This is a very individual sport. So you've got to be your best cheerleader. You've got to be your best motivator. You got to keep yourself, and you cannot beat yourself up when you're out there playing for 4.5 hours. You start getting down on yourself, and it's going to wear on you. It's going to tear up your confidence, and before you know it, you're playing to the expectations of what you're putting on yourself.
Well, right. I mean, even boxers have their coaches at ringside. I mean, with golf, it's just you. There's
just
no
you.
One coaching you while you're out there. So you got to do it for yourself.
You bet you do.
Oh, well, I know that I've had some luck on my own where if I have an errant tee shot, I'll be able to say to myself, "I could still par the hole." And that helps.
You bet.
You know, I could still get there. And then just try to get it close. Don't,
that is the game. It, you know,
it doesn't always
one
happen.
Of the, you asked me early on, I mean, some of the best knowledge that, you know, Arnold's given me, and he's given me all sorts of great stuff. And, you know, one of the things that I heard him say one day to a gentleman that he was playing with in a pro-am, and this guy was so excited, he's going to play with Arnold Palmer. And he gets up on the first hole at Bay Hill, and he first duck hooks it into the driving range, and then he blocks the next one out of bounds. And he is so frustrated, and he's getting angry. And walking down the fairway, Arnold, you know, kind of walks up to him. He goes, "Yeah, first off, Jim," he goes, he kind of chuckles. He goes, "You're not that good to get that ticked off." And they laughed, and he goes, "And second, here's my expectations when I come to the golf course." He said, "I expect for the next 4.5 hours, I am going to be challenged. Nothing more, nothing less. If I come out here thinking I'm going to shoot 68, I'll shoot 78. I have got to keep my mindset on every shot at hand, knowing that I'm going to be challenged. That's what the game is all about." And it's probably some of the best advice I'd ever heard.
Yeah, that's amazing. Let's talk about expectations. What should we do to ourselves? What can we do to keep ourselves in check but still have expectations without beating ourselves up?
Well, you know, there's certain things that we do to be prepared to play. And those that, you know, have the time to go out and work on their games and have put in the time on their short game and put in their time, you know, with a good instructor, learning the technique of a good fundamental swing, you know, their expectations are that, you know, they're going to have a fairly decent game. You know what your handicap is. You know what you're capable of shooting. And, you know, if you've done a good job of understanding the course that you're going to play and take an approach to that, you know, your expectations are, all right, I can go out, I can manage my game and play pretty well as long as I, you know, play my grid golf and focus on the right things. A lot of times, you know, some of the errors that I would see with people with expectations is that they they get in, a lot of junior golfers especially, they'll get into tournaments, and it's a tournament now, and they really want to play well, and they want to win. And they start having expectations beyond where they've ever been before. I think some of that is good, but I think sometimes that can turn into undue pressure, and you know, that can turn around and nip you in the butt. The other thing that I've noticed myself over the years of being a player is every time I've shot a really, really good round, it's hard to follow it up. I don't know if that's ever happened to you, Fred, but you know, it seems to be a trend, and you can see it even on the PGA Tour. Guys will go out and shoot 63 or 64. The next day they followed up with a real tough 75. And why is that? You know, I think that what happens is that day before becomes just magic. Everything is just going your way, and you just get into the zone, and things are rocking. And, you know, then you show up the next day with expectations that you're going to do it again. And you go out there, and maybe as a result of your expectations being high, you're not focusing on the core things that are important to you, scoring. And you hit that one wild shot, and you end up making a bogey. And, you know, you struggle a little bit on the greens, and they're not going in like they were the day before. And before you know it, after a couple, three holes, you don't have the patience that you had the day before that allowed you to get into the round and things to happen, and you're getting frustrated. And then it becomes a struggle for the rest of the day. That happens very much. So I always tell my players that have had a really good round going on to the next day is that keep your expectations focused on the things you have control of. Focus on your emotional control. It's a very key thing. Focus on the strategy in which you want to play the golf course. Focus on your routines. Focus on those, that thought process in which we talked about. And I always try to, you know, try to get them to feel like the next shot is the most important shot, and allow, you know, each attentive shot to equal the success of that round, instead of the expectations that, ooh, I'm going to go out there and shoot another 64 today, without going through the process of, all right, first goal here is to get this ball in the fairway. And second goal is, let's get it on the green. And third goal is, let's try to get it in the hole. And keep it as simple as that. And if you do that, you will play yourself into that good process that you had going on the day before, where you start zoning it, without the expectations making your mind race and get ahead of you or get disappointed too early in the round.
I thought it was just me. I feel so much better. You know, I've always kind of put golf in the same category with the ocean and fire. And that is, just when you think you've got it under control, it's going to bite you in the butt.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
And swallow you whole and not even care about it.
Yeah, it's those famous last words, oh, I think I've got it now.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, you shoot a great round going, okay, I've now everything is working so well. Here I go, and whoops, you just slip on the bath mat. Bang. Oh, man. In talking about coaching and not being able to have a coach with you on the course, or, you know, getting to your teacher as often as you'd like to, there's new methods of, for you, of being able to work with your students these days. I noticed something on your website about e-coaching technology.
Yes.
What is that?
Oh, it's great stuff. It's, you know, being able to use the technology that's available out there today and communicate with our clients is just a wonderful thing. I have close to 800 students right now throughout the world that are, you know, registered on our e-coaching accounts. And what we do is, you know, it's someone who's maybe come through our program here, or people that have heard about it, and they just want to, you know, have someone help them with their organization of their practice, organization of, you know, what their goals and objectives should be, and have some accountability with someone. So the program allows us to be able to communicate in a variety of different ways. One of the things that we do is I can take a swing that someone has captured with a camera. They can send it through eCoaching account to my account, and I pull it up. I analyze it. I give them recommendations for what to focus on. That's done with streaming video, and then it's you know, put back into their account online. So it's a good you know, ability for us to document where they're at, what they're doing, and then get them focused on the key things that are going to help them improve their game. I've actually got about 60 different drills and instructionals now that are in our drill library, and I don't assign all 60 of them. That would be like trying to drink water out of a fire hose. What I do is, you know, you send me your swing, Fred, and I see that you're having a tendency of having some posture issues. I'm going to assign a couple drills to you. These are the key focused things that I want you to be attentive to right now, and then that will be the amount of content that will be in your account until we move on to the next. And then with some of my athletes that maybe some of the juniors that I'm working with and some of the aspiring amateurs and professionals who like to play competitive golf, e-coaching gives us the ability to actually do some periodization training with them through a calendaring system where I can assign a workout for the week to get them prepared for the tournament that's coming up the next week. And so I'll go into their account and say, all right, here's what I want you to work on for this particular week. And they can go online and pull up their daily focus, you know, work on it, and then journal it so that there's a document that I can take a look at and they can go back and review as well. And there's a variety of other things in which it allows us to do, like, for instance, notes and assessment of goals and objectives. So all these key things are now done online. And so for me, someone who basically sells the invisible, I'm talking to someone typically, and you don't know how much is actually going through one ear and out the next. Now it becomes a tangible a thing that can be documented and put online and be pulled up in the future. So I have references of where we've been and what we've worked on, and so do the clients. It's great, great technology that's making my job easier and much more precise than what it was before.
Easier? It sounds like you have a lot more work. I mean, 800
actually,
students on this?
Well, it's...
they said that, you know, computers are going to make our life easier. It doesn't sound like with 800 students that you have to do that much follow-up on.
You know what? I would not have been able to communicate with 800 students without technology like this. There's no way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And now I can manage, you know, large amounts of people and their content much more efficiently. I mean, for instance, that drill library, you know, I do it one time. It's done professionally with good images and the right content information that I want. And then it's just reused over and over and over again. And I can go in and tweak it anytime I want, but the lion's share has been pre-done. So it makes delivering good quality information to someone much quicker than what it was before.
You mentioned drills, and I'm going to hold you to one because we have time for one more question here, and it doesn't matter how long your answer is. But for the winter months, where a lot of people in the world can't be playing golf anymore, but they want to keep fresh, they want to keep, you know, mentally ready or physically ready, can you give us a drill that'll just keep us fresh without us having to be able to go outside?
Well, I grew up in Minnesota, so I know I know exactly what we go through this time of year, and I got to be honest with you. I think this is a time of year, if you spend time working in a mirror, working on your technique, making sure that your basic fundamentals are sound, it makes it so much easier when you get out there and start hitting golf balls again. And so I kind of enjoy having this opportunity with my northern folks to set goals for their technique, because I think what happens when you put balls in front of them is they resort back to their old feels. So if I get 40 days and 40 nights and they can do 100 reps a day on something, guess what? That equals 4,000 reps, and that will be a swing change. Mm-hmm. And it does take about that much. So being able to do it indoors, being able to be attentive with your grip, making sure that, you know, you've got a nice neutral grip, being attentive with your posture, your alignment, your ball position, all those things can be rehearsed without hitting golf balls. And as a result, when you come up in February, March, April, wherever you're at in the country, and the green grass starts to pop again, you're going to be ready to rock.
How difficult is it for you living in Florida, having golf 12 months a year now? You must not be used to that.
Well, it's been a little over 20 years now, so
all right,
I've kind of gotten used to it. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, Brad, there are so many more things I'd love to discuss with you. I hope that I can call you again and we can do this one more time, at least.
Absolutely. Sure can.
Thank you so much. We really value your time and your feedback and the insight that you provided to us. BradBrewer.com. It's simple enough. You want to check out more information. Brad, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Fred. Thanks for having me on.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Hey, Kenny, I hope you had a Merry Christmas.
Hey, Fred, you too, and yes, I absolutely did.
I'm so glad to hear it. My best to the girls.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll tell them.
Hey, you know, we haven't reviewed any equipment in quite a while, and I would really like to get that because people are asking about clubs and things. So do you have something for us to review?
Actually, I do. It's something that we're going to be doing a giveaway on this week as well. So
Oh. It's
something I wanted to touch base on. It's a great set of irons. It's the Tour Edge QL iron set. And what makes this set of golf clubs so unique is the 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 iron, or a hybrid type, or what we call an ironwood. And then the 8, 9, and pitching wedge are a traditional-looking iron. And what I mean by a hybrid-looking or ironwood is it has, you know, kind of a fat back to it and a large sole, so it's hard to hit the club fat. And what that does is it creates a lower center of gravity, which helps get the ball airborne, but also creates a more stable moment of inertia, so the less twisting and impact if you don't hit it on the sweet spot. If you hit it out towards the toe or the heel, the club doesn't twist as much on you. So some people say it's cheating because they're so easy to hit, but if they're approved by the USGA, I say take it every advantage that you can.
There you go. Now, are more companies going to this kind of hybrid club?
More are. If you look at some of the bigger companies, you know, it's not so much an iron wood, but Callaway makes the Big Bertha iron that has a larger, fatter sole on it. You know, Ping makes a high launch in their iron as well. A lot of them, especially in the longer irons, they make something that makes it easier for the golfer to get the ball airborne. Because a lot of guys, when they hit a 3, 4, or 5, or 6 iron, what they do is the ball's running through the green, or they're having to hit short and try to run it up there. And this, what it enables them to do is to be able to get the ball up in the air and able to stop it on the green, which is something that a lot of people can't do with a long iron.
And is this have more advantage for a higher handicap player or any player?
Well, if you look on the PGA Tour, the majority of the guys do carry a hybrid, not so much in a long iron, but some type of hybrid, you know, that takes the place of a 2-iron or a 1-iron in their bag. I say it's a club that the majority of the player can use, but the better player is not going to want to use it in their, you know, 5-6-iron like the average to high handicap player would in the Tour Edge QL or another iron that is similar.
And you mentioned that the 3 through 7 were these hybrid clubs. What about the 8, 9 and pitching wedge?
Now, that goes back to a traditional-looking golf club. Still has a low center of gravity to help get the ball airborne, but it has a traditional look to it, like most golfers are used to. You know, somebody that it's any club that has loft, an 8-9 or pitching wedge, you're going to hit easier than you are something that has less loft, a 3, 4, 5, or 6. So, you know, you're getting more into every golfer's comfort zone when you get into an 8-9 or pitching wedge. So, you know, they don't have near as much trouble as they do with a long iron.
Well, it's actually interesting that one of the questions that we received in the Ask Kenny questions this week was from Brad Dole of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And he asked, I was wondering what Kenny thinks are things that every golfer should have in their golf bags.
Well, that's a perfect question for today's product review, because every golfer should carry some type of hybrid. You know, especially something to replace one of your long irons. If you carry a 2-iron, a 3-iron, or something like that, you need to get an 18 or 21-degree hybrid. It's longer than a traditional iron shaft by about half an inch to an inch. So you're going to hit it a little bit further, but you're also going to hit the club a lot higher. And there, from any lie, whether you're in a divot, whether you're in the rough, or whether you're in the fairway, it's very easy to get the club face on the golf ball. And even if you don't get it all the way down where it's supposed to, the club has enough low center of gravity that it's going to create lift. And, you know, I used the term in there, and I actually got it from reading a magazine one time. It's considered cheating in a sense, because it makes that shot so much easier for any golfer. It doesn't matter if he's on the PGA Tour or whether he shoots 130 on 9 holes. That club's going to be easier to hit than most clubs that are in his bag.
I know that for my hybrid use, the club that I use for my longer shots, it doesn't really replace my 3-iron, which I like. It really replaced a fairway wood for me. When I'm hitting through the rough, it's like cutting through butter. It's amazing how easy it goes through it.
Yeah, it does. It does work better than a fairway wood. The thing to keep in mind, though, if you have a 18-degree hybrid and you have an 18-degree 5-wood, the 5-wood is going to still hit the ball further because the shaft is longer. Anytime you increase shaft length, you're going to increase club head speed. So keep in mind, even though you have the same loft in a hybrid that you do a fairway wood, doesn't mean that you're going to hit those the exact same. There's a lot of people that carry a 5-wood that's 18 degrees and also a hybrid that's 18 degrees. You know, because you're going to hit it definitely a little bit shorter. And always remember, if you choke down just a little bit, that club's going to go even shorter than what it normally is. So you can use it in a lot of different variety of shots.
Oh, well, thank you, because I never claimed to know what I was doing. So thanks for the education. And actually, Brad, for submitting that question, we're going to make sure that we send you a Golf Smarter Edwin Watts golf hat. And if you want to submit a question to Ask Kenny, you'll receive one as well. Wow, that's great information. Those are the Tour Edge QL irons, right?
That's correct.
And what's the value on those if somebody wanted to buy a set?
The value on those is about $600.
But you also mentioned you have a set to give away?
That is correct. We're going to be giving a set of those away on the next giveaway episode, which I believe you have the answer to that.
I do have the answer to that. And now you're really getting my paperwork all crazy here, because we were going to do the drawing, our last drawing, but let's announce this one now. We'll go ahead and give away a Tour Edge, that's T-O-U-R, Edge, two words, Tour Edge QL Irons, valued at $600. If you'd like to win a set, and I'm sure you would, send an email with the subject Tour Edge to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com. Make the subject Tour Edge. And along with your email address, please include your shipping address so we know where to send the prize when you win. For more information, check the show notes. Because so many people are getting new iPods and they're discovering Golf Smarter Podcast, and a lot of people are away from their computers during the holidays, we're going to allow everyone to catch up and go for 3 weeks on this drawing. So the deadline for entries is midnight, January 8th, and we'll announce the winner on the program of January 9th, 2007. Now let's go back to our previous giveaway. It's time to announce the winner. We received 81 entries to the FootJoy Real Fit shoes with the BOA technology, valued at $200. And there's a couple comments that we received actually about this that cracked me up, and I just wanted to share these with you, Kenny. I love FootJoy, and Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. All I want for Christmas are 2 happy feet. And then Christina, you were hilarious. She said, pick my name for the shoes because, as you know, a gal can never have enough shoes.
That's a good one.
And then this came from George Rush. I'm going to have to read this carefully so I don't skew you anyway here, Kenny. But he wanted to say, please tell Kenny that he seems to always pick numbers in the middle of the alphabetical city listing range. I don't want to move. So ask him if he can pick a number closer to the, and I'm not going to tell you if it's a top or bottom, what he said, of the list sometime. I don't see how anyone can be a good golfer or a smart golfer wearing tennis shoes, and I would love to have a new pair of these golf shoes. My shoe size is 10.5D. Thank you, George Rush. And then Ken wrote to us and said that he went to his local golf store and tried on a pair of these shoes, and he said that in Canada they sell for $270, so a chance to win a pair would be great. All right, 81 entries, and I did sort these alphabetically by city. And you are to pick a number between 1 and 81, and you can pick 1 or 81 or anything in between, Kenny. And the winner is number?
We're gonna try something different, and we're going to go with number 2.
Number 2? Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute. Let me look through this. Are you kidding me? That's true. The winner is George Rush of Augusta, Georgia. It's the guy who wrote the letter. Okay, George.
That's pure
love. All right, George, shut up, okay? I hope you're happy. And that's really funny that you did that. Well, he did say to pick at the top, and I didn't tell you that, but it is Augusta, Georgia. And George Rush, congratulations.
Congratulations, George. Your lucky day.
And Merry Christmas to you. All right, so don't forget, send in your information now. Our next drawing for the Tour Edge QL Irons. Subject Tour Edge to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com, and please include your shipping information. All right, Kenny Nicholson, we will speak to you in a week.
Thanks, Brad. Y'all take care.
Thanks so much, buddy. We end with our quote of the week, which is generally submitted by you. And if you have a favorite golf quote that keeps your head in the game or makes you laugh, please send it to me with a subject quote. This week's quote is from NBA legend Michael Jordan, who is a student of Brad Brewer and is quoted in Brad's booklet of high-performance golf. Fundamentals don't change. It's my attention to the fundamentals that do. Questions, comments, quotes, or suggestions? Send your emails to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com.